Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
As good as Sam Darnold was, however, that game was about how bad the Lions were more than it was about how good the Jets were. I think that's a fair approximation of what took place in that game. And for the Lions to go out in the opening game of the Matt Patricia era and look as bad as they did, I think is an ominous sign. Matt Patricia and Willie Taggart for Florida State are up there, I think, as the worst debuting NFL head coach and the worst debuting college football head coach. And I'm not sure which one had a worst first game. All right, the later game, I'm going to be honest with you. While I like the doubleheader, I pass out during the doubleheader of this game because we get up here in the Outkick mansion at 4:20-ish a.m. every morning. So I'm watching that game. I'm intrigued. I love that the Raiders came out, got the first touchdown. I'm thinking to myself, yeah, everybody's overrated. All of the offseason drama. John Gruden still got it. And when I wake up, turns out the Raiders got whooped. And Derek Carr looked like not the good version of Derek Carr. Threw three interceptions. I'm going to bring in Danny G, resident Raiders homer and expert. Where on the panic button should the Raiders be after week one?
You have the Raiders as number six on your list?
Well, not in particular. I haven't ranked the five worst so far, but I said there are six teams to me that after week one, they need to be close to hitting the panic button. The Bills, and look, let me say when I break these down, the Bills knew they were going to be bad, right? So if you have a young quarterback, I feel like it's not as if you came into the season thinking, you know what, maybe Nathan Peterman's going to win us the AFC East. Maybe Josh Allen's going to be the MVP of the league. Like, the Bills knew that they were in a rebuilding mode and they had to figure out whether they had a quarterback. The Titans, we still don't know what's going on with Marcus Mariota. That's why the Titans should be panicked, because otherwise it's Blaine Gabbert as quarterback for the rest of the year. It looks like Marcus Mariota's not hurt that bad, but when they don't immediately come out at the press conference the day after and give you a medical verdict, that makes me a little bit nervous. The Cardinals, they don't have a quarterback. They kind of knew that they were in rough shape, but they got whipped by the Washington Redskins. That's not good. Mr. September, Alex Smith, came into town and crushed them. The Cowboys are awful. The Cowboys, I believe Dak Prescott is mediocre. They've got no offensive playmakers. I think they're in trouble. The Lions looked atrocious. Now, at least Matthew Stafford has proven that he can be pretty good. Same thing is true of Derek Carr, but the Lions and the Raiders. So I would say those six teams looked the worst of all the six teams and or had injury situations or looked bad enough that if you are an NFL fan, you have to be really nervous if you're a fan of all those teams.
Well, I was hoping that you went to bed at halftime of the Raiders game because they were winning 13-10, dominating the time of possession, kept the Rams' high-powered offense off the field. Marshawn Lynch opened the game with one of the most incredible runs you'll see towards the goal line. And so at halftime, all the Twitter trolls were so quiet. I knew they were sitting there with their finger near the keyboard just waiting for the Rams offense to explode. And that did happen. In the second half of the game, the Rams went off. Derek Carr looked like a deer in headlights. He has happy feet. He does not
What has happened to Derek Carr?
He's shell-shocked. He just is. He's never been the same.
This is what happened. Injury.
Not just that, the Washington Redskins game last season too. And combine that with the broken leg game against the Colts at the end of 16, that's the Derek Carr we have right now, and it's really sad because he's such a great kid. He's a good player. Obviously, he was an MVP candidate in 2016. 2 years removed, he looks like a completely different quarterback. He needs to get his swag back. He needs to get his confidence back in the pocket. He needs some chemistry with the new receivers on the team. The only receiver, Clay, that he had any sort of chemistry with was tight end Jared Cook, who made some amazing plays in the game himself. And Carr, for whatever reason, looked like an MVP-type quarterback only when he was throwing the ball to Jared Cook. When he tried to throw the ball to anybody else, it was bad. So
what verdict would you give John Gruden's return?
Gruden called a great game in the first half. It's like they I don't know how to explain the second half to you. You're going to have to watch the replay. They were playing, obviously, one of the best teams in the NFL. Had that been the Browns, say the Browns against the Rams, it would have been 51-0 at halftime, honestly. So the Raiders hung in there and showed that they have heart, at least in the first half. They completely fell apart in the second half. So it was a tale of two halves. As the old saying goes, it's hard to say what kind of team they're going to be this year.
Who do the Raiders play in week two? I haven't even turned the page
Broncos.
Yet to week two.
Denver Broncos.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of matchups of 0-2 teams. The Lions play, I was looking at this, and this is intriguing. I said before that if you start off 0-2, and look, there are exceptions, but if you start off 0-2, by and large, there is a 90%-ish chance that you're not going to make the playoffs in the NFL. So you can lose week one, you can lose week two. You can't typically lose both of them. Listen to some of these games between 0-1 teams. This is going to be a big storyline, I think, as we continue the week. This is from my guy Ryan Glasspiegel, who put this together. The 49ers play the Lions. Those are two teams that obviously had hopes of not only making the playoffs but contending in their divisions. The Bears play the Seahawks. The Chargers play the Bills. Now, the Bills are awful, but the Chargers are my Super Bowl pick, and they have to go on the road. Can you imagine if the Bills bounced back and gave the Chargers a game? The Texans and the Titans play, and the Cowboys and the Giants play. All of those teams are 0-1, and, you know, what, five of those teams are going to be 0-2, and all of those teams had pretty good chances or aspirations to win their division. Now, it's only a 90% chance that you are done, but there are a lot of big games that I just ran through there. 49ers, Lions, Bears, Seahawks, Chargers, Bills, Texans, Titans, Cowboys, Giants. That's a lot of intensity coming in week two for the teams that started off 0-1. And can you imagine, when you look at all this, the way that's going to shake out? All right, so Roberto, you're also a Raiders fan. Defend your team.
Going back to what Danny was saying, in the second half, the Rams started putting Aqib Talib on Jared Cook, so Carr's target wasn't there, and he had to find other receivers, and then the offense wasn't clicking as
don't
good.
Don't you guys have Amari Cooper?
Yeah, exactly.
Why
yeah.
do you need Jared Cook to be your top target?
I don't know.
Well, yeah. In the broadcast, they kept explaining that Gruden loves matchups. He loves matchups.
Yes.
And so they were trying to exploit the weakness that the Rams defense had when trying to cover Cook, right? Because
yeah. Jared
he's like
Cook
six
is a great
inches
dude.
Taller than everyone else. Yeah. So they were targeting Cook the whole first half. And then, as Roberto just said, that plan fell apart in the second half.
Well, as you could well imagine it would.
Yeah, because obviously Wade Phillips, a smart defensive coordinator, made the right adjustment. But I felt like they should have kept pounding the rock because they were looking good when Doug Martin ran the ball, and they looked really good when Marshawn Lynch ran the ball. But when they got behind by a touchdown, they started to air the ball out. And that doesn't mean a vertical game because there was none. Carr, ever since he was injured, he hasn't been throwing down the field. He's been throwing, you know, this dink and dunk junk from the West Coast offense. And he looks decent when he's throwing those routes. When he's been trying to go deep, it's been bad news.
True. And the other elephant in the room, let's just say it, Danny, the pass rush wasn't there for the Raiders.
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday, Clay.
Khalil Mack is gone, and suddenly the pass rush is gone.
Jared Goff, he patted the ball 5-6 times every time he dropped back. What does that tell you?
He's got time to throw.
Yeah.
All right. The Raider fans are trying to defend their team. Eddie Garcia, you have to hear about Raiders all the time. How bad do they look?
Well, in the first half they were fine, but in that second half it was a disaster. And as you said yesterday, as much as Khalil Mack's, you know, the trade of Khalil Mack
yes.
is to me a signal that maybe the Raiders thought going into this year that they really weren't a contender, that they're looking to build for the future and for when they move to Vegas. You said it yourself, the number one job of John Gruden is to fix Derek Carr.
Correct.
Three interceptions, no touchdowns. That second interception, I have no idea what he was doing. I mean, he just threw it up.
Yeah, it was a lob.
It was awful. I have no explanation for what that was. I mean, On the other interceptions, you can make a case where maybe the receiver didn't complete the route or he saw something else. That second one, it was inexplicable. So at least for one game, John Gruden obviously still has his work cut out for him to fix Derek Carr because he still looks very broken to me.
Eddie, did you notice, and I'm sorry, Clay, just really quick, they kept using the word rebuild on the broadcast. And remember, we talked about that yesterday. What happened to winning right now? That's why most Raider fans are upset about Khalil Mack being traded.
I don't think you should ever use the phrase rebuild if you believe you have a franchise quarterback. You can certainly say, hey, look, we have a lot of holes to fill. But if you have a franchise quarterback that you truly believe in, you should be contending for the division title every year in your mind. Now, things might not go right. You might lose a lot of close games. When it's November or December and you're sitting at 3-9 or something like that, yes, in the last 4 weeks of the season, you can try and figure out what makes sense going forward. But to me, the Derek Carr decision, he looked like a franchise quarterback before he broke his leg. And everything about hiring John Gruden to me is predicated on one question. Can he make Derek Carr great again? Can he take Derek Carr back to what was an MVP caliber season prior to the broken leg? I'm not an X's and O's guy. I don't pretend to understand what has happened. Part of me thinks that something has gone on in Derek Carr that has made his failures mental. It doesn't make sense to me that suddenly NFL defenses figured out Derek Carr.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Show's always confident, especially when we have guests like Charles Davis. He's going to be calling the Vikings and Packers game, Minnesota Green Bay, huge game coming up this weekend. Charles, I want to start with you, though. You're down in the state of Florida. I know where you live. How excited were you, even as a former Tennessee Volunteer, to see Kentucky finally break a 31-year losing streak against the Gators?
I love how we've started. I know where you live, so immediately yeah. I'm on notice, Clay. All right.
Yeah.
So, I told her I'm sending the hand signals to the house now. Everybody, pack it up. Be ready. Clay knows where I live. I like that start. But as a former Vol, I love how you frame that because you remember when we, as Tennessee Volunteers, had that streak over Kentucky.
Oh.
Thought, and it got to the stage where there were games where Tennessee had no business winning, but you're just like, they're going to win it because it's Kentucky. And they did. And then the streak was finally broken. And once we lost that, haven't had much success in recent years, we needed Kentucky to beat Florida so finally someone else can understand that those streaks aren't forever. So I was cool with the whole thing. Yes, indeed.
There are a lot of stories coming out of NFL Week 1. A couple that I'm going to hit you with. New NFL head coaches go 0-6. I said that there are six teams that need to maybe consider hitting the panic button after Week 1. The Bills, Titans, Cardinals, Cowboys, Lions, and Raiders. What jumped out to you kind of overall? And I know it's difficult when you're calling a game, but in general, was there any kind of trend lines that to you stood out from Week 1 in the NFL?
Clay, I was nervous about Week 1. I think we all are who watch the game, that Thursday night Eagles-Falcons would be the trend across the league, meaning
yes.
A ton of flags, right? A game with no flow, that sort of deal. But I was pleasantly surprised that in a good number of games we didn't have that. It looked a little bit better because you mentioned the panic button. I talked to 3-4 people. You know, you and I were kind of the same person. We talked to a lot of people around the league and around different things. And they were all like, oh, God, preseason. They've got to figure out preseason. Not so much that guys aren't playing, but maybe guys should be playing because Thursday night was just brutal. Well, I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, the game I had, San Francisco-Minnesota, we had good flow, not a ton of penalty flags, not a lot of those mistakes because guys haven't been playing. And what I really enjoyed, and it was good for most people, in our game, we didn't have an overabundance of injuries. We had one bad sequence where the two right guards for San Francisco went down back-to-back. But other than that, we didn't have guys dropping left and right. So I thought that part was good. You mentioned all the rookie coaches or the brand-new coaches, none of them winning. I think the thing that blew me away last night was just how fast things turned for the Lions. You get a pick six to start the game, and after that, you're playing catch up the rest of the night. And then it just got to be turned into a blowout. It's like I just couldn't figure out how it all just went so wrong so fast for them. And that was just a major surprise to me.
We're talking to Charles Davis, voice of Madden, as my kids would want me to say. They are so impressed every time that they hear your voice. You called the Vikings game. I picked the Vikings as my Super Bowl champ. In your mind, are the Vikings good enough to win the Super Bowl?
They are good enough to win it, but they've got to get some things cleaned up quickly on offense in terms of offensive line. And that'll help when Pat Elflein comes back healthy. It can assume the center position again, and that'll make them stronger everywhere else. Because right now, Joe Berger retired last year, and who would have thought we'd say Joe Berger was the key to the O-line? He would have gone in and taken over the center spot, and they would have been stronger. But they had to trade for Brett Jones. He's just joined the team. You get the idea. But the rest of the team, pretty darn good. Last thing I'll say on them, though, Clay, is this. That defense that was so great last year, they'll be great again this year, but they'll need to have more days like they had Sunday where they take the ball away, which they didn't do as much of last year. Because there's no way you're holding everyone to 25% on third down like you did the year before. That's just too much to ask. But they go +3 in turnovers, they'll be just fine.
We're talking to Charles Davis. You can find him on Twitter at CFD22. He's calling the Green Bay Vikings game coming up this weekend. Okay, on the other side of the equation there for what you saw, Jimmy Garoppolo and I would say Deshaun Watson, probably the most hyped quarterbacks coming into week one action. Both of them went on the road and lost tough games. Jimmy G obviously down to the Vikings, Deshaun Watson down to the Patriots. What did you see of Jimmy G and that offense from the San Francisco 49ers? Are they a legitimate threat in your mind in the NFC West, or what do they need to work on?
I think that the 49ers are definitely going to be better. The 5-0 finish last year wasn't a mirage. Remember, they jumped on Jacksonville, who's, as we know, is darn good down the stretch last year. They beat the Rams, but the Rams didn't play anyone. But here's the thing. Offensive line, I mentioned the injuries that they had. That's going to be a problem for them until they can get that shored up, and here's hoping those guys can get back quickly. But that kid, Garoppolo, a lot of pressure, a lot of duress. He made some throws he'd love to have back. But he also made, I think you've seen it on highlight, where he almost got sacked, bounced out to his left, and threw off his back foot, falling away into the end zone for Dante Pettis, that you go, oh, yeah, that's why they paid him the money. I think he's the real deal. I think they're going to be improved. I don't think they're the threat to the Rams just yet, but they're definitely going to be improved. And defensively, they played even better than maybe what I expected. So I love the direction San Francisco is going. But I don't think that they are at the Rams level yet, no.
Talking to Charles Davis, you played defensive back. Aaron Rodgers gets carted off, comes back on the field, and performs at a level that is frankly not reachable by very many people in the history of the game. How good is Aaron Rodgers? You've got his game coming up this weekend. What are you hearing about his health? Do you expect him to be out there against the Vikings?
He's as good as I've seen in my lifetime. I expect him to be out there. His quote post game was one that in the good old days you would have said, yep, that's a warrior, where he talked about his teammates and them looking to the quarterback for his toughness and what they give up for you, you've got to give it back to them. I do expect him to be out there unless, the MRI has said, torn ACL or something along those lines. What I saw Sunday night and him trotting back out there as a former DB, I can just tell you this, Clay, unless you were a rookie, and rookies barely remember yesterday, the veterans all looked at each other when he trotted back out there for the Bears and said, oh, Lord, here he comes. Here he comes. Because it didn't matter what he had done before. The veterans know that if he's coming back out here, he's coming out here to do work. And their worst fear came true. And we saw it happen. And the Bears are you have to be shell-shocked on that one. But let's face it, as fans, we've seen it before out of Aaron Rodgers, and that was really impressive.
When you look at what happened last night, we're talking to Charles Davis. Go follow him on Twitter. Thank him for getting up with us at CFD22 on Twitter. You can track him down there. When you look at Monday night, the Detroit Lions were awful, and Matthew Stafford was really bad, and Derek Carr did not perform very well in the second half, and the Raiders lost the John Gruden return. when you look at those two guys, Derek Carr and Matthew Stafford, are you nervous about how they're looking there with new coaches in Matt Patricia and John Gruden, or do you think those were just aberrations? How do you break down and assess those performances?
Start with Stafford. That's one of the most extreme aberrations for where he is in his career. If we were talking about the first 2-3 years in Detroit, I saw some of that. But where he's been the last 3 years in his career, to me, that's an extreme aberration, and I don't spend too much time thinking I'm going to see this week in and week out. Plus, don't forget, he pretty much has the same offensive system. I mean, Jim Bob Cooter stayed as the OC, and right on down the line. I think that that'll even itself out. Matthew Stafford's too good to do that all the time. Derek Carr, on the other hand, it's going to be, you know, growing pains, learning pains all the way through because everything's still new for him, and he's still learning John Gruden, even though it's a great love affair. He has to learn John. John still has to learn exactly what things he wants to push with Derek Carr. And it's a team that probably after the Khalil Mack trade, and I, you know, look, people know this about me and John. John and I were roommates way back when we were coaching buddies at the University of Pacific, and he's one of my best friends. So I have bias involved in the whole thing. I haven't had a chance to talk to him, Clay. I'm still trying to process getting rid of Khalil Mack. And if I were on that team, I think that they're still having, trying to process that. Why exactly is he gone again when the Rams found a way to work it out with Aaron Donald and then to watch him against Green Bay? So I just wonder how that team is handling all of that, not to overplay it, but I don't think you can underplay it as well.
So you know Gruden really, really well. Has the game in any way passed him by in your mind? Or because you will hear if there are people who are trying to sell short John Gruden's stock with the Raiders, they will say, you know what, it's not the same game as when he left. He's been in the booth calling the game for Monday Night Football for a while. In your mind, has he still got it? Has he still got the ability to win at a high level as a head coach in the NFL?
He does. He does, and he's going to do it the way he wants to do it. And you know he loves the veterans. I think Booker McFarland made that point last night, and it was a legitimate one. John wants veteran players, sometimes to the detriment of the young guys, et cetera, et cetera. But quick answer, Clay, no, the game has not passed him by, and this is something a lot of people may not know, but I'm just going to, just as long as you can hear my voice, understand this. For all the years John was out of football as a coach, coaches around the country were coming to him to talk football every opportunity they got. You know, you always heard about John's office, you know, where he lives in that little strip mall and what have you. You name a big-time coach around the country, he and his staff rolled through that office to talk every aspect of football. Game hasn't passed him by, no.
We talk a lot of NFL. I know you're also a huge college football fan. You called college football for Fox for a long time. You're a big Tennessee guy. I got to ask you, what do you think of Jeremy Pruitt so far?
He's all ball. And, Clay, I've said this so many times, but it's true. In this business, it's going to sound arrogant what I'm about to say, but there are very few coaches that rise up, become head coaches in this era and in this time frame that I have not met or encountered or dealt with along the way just because I've been fortunate enough to be involved in the business, okay? So it's not like it's, oh, yeah, I just know everybody. It's just when you're in this business and you do what I do, you tend to meet people along the way, right? You tend to hear, here's the new hot guy, here's this guy. I've never met Jeremy Pruitt, which I never would have thought I'd say about a guy who's the head coach at my alma mater. But I know him by reputation. I know him from other people. He is a guy that if you and I never showed up at his office with a microphone or a camera to sit down and do an interview, would be the happiest man in America. He just wants to coach ball. He wants to recruit kids, coach ball, teach ball, and the rest of us can go jump. Well, I'm okay with that. You know, he has to do what he has to do for the media stuff. Bottom line is he's there to try and get this team back on track, and I am way okay with that opportunity. Now, it's going to take some time, but I think I said it before, second half of the year, that's what I'm really looking to find out things, Clay. And it's real simple for me. You know how I'm going to evaluate this year, barring catastrophic injuries and all? How will we compete against teams that we normally beat and compete with year in and year out? And I mean Kentucky, Vanderbilt, you know, Missouri, people like that we should be right there with all the time. That's what I'm looking to see. Because I'm under no illusions that we're ready to take on the big boys yet, but I expect us to be down the road.
You're down there in the state of Florida. Florida Gators lose to the Kentucky Wildcats, as we talked about earlier.
Convincing.
Florida State has looked really bad with Willie Taggart, and Miami got whipped pretty soundly by LSU. What's the vibe in the Sunshine State about the three primary programs? Obviously, Central Florida and South Florida are continuing to look pretty good, but the three big straw that stirs the drink college football programs there are those three. What's the vibe?
Yeah, there's a lot of at Florida State, Willie Taggart's offseason could not have been better. All right, he did all the right things. Bobby Bowden brought back into the fold, a lot more excitement. People there were ready for Jimbo to go. As Jimbo was ready to leave, they were ready for him to go, and they were excited about Willie Taggart, and then they saw the offense the first two games, and now it's turned to a complete worry. Dan Mullen, as much as they were happy to have him in, the excitement level never just like overly peaked. And I think that right now they're kind of sitting back, resigned to the fact that they have to do a little rebuilding. And I think it's a little more numb than anything else is what I'm feeling from them. Miami, you know, they keep saying, we're back. Oh, we're not back. So we'll just see what happens. You know, things like the turnover chain, which was so exciting last year. I said in the offseason, Clay, things like that you should do 1 year and then retire them. Because, I mean, I watched the LSU kid. Did you see it in the game when he got the first takeaway against Miami?
Yes.
He goes to the sidelines, and his teammates drape a towel around his neck like it's a turnover chain. Those things, instead of them becoming symbols of really good for you, they become symbols that can be mocked if things aren't going right. And turnovers are one of those things that 1 year you really get a bunch of them. The next year you can play just as hard and the ball doesn't bounce your way. So I worry about that. But the last thing I will say, UCF fans, they are chesty, man. I mean, they are walking around with big grins and pride. And I've never seen so much black and gold. And I've lived in this town for 23 years now. And guess what? They deserve to be that way.
Last question for you, the fumble rule. I'm sure you saw the end of the A&M and Clemson game.
Yeah.
And you played football for much of your life. Does that rule make sense that if you fumble the ball going into the end zone, the other team gets the ball back at the 20-yard line? Or if you were in charge of football, would you change it?
It is a weird rule because anywhere else you fumble, it's just a determination on where it went out of bounds, and then you spot the ball, right?
Yes.
So I always struggled with that rule. As a defender, I loved it because it seems very dramatic, right? It's such a swing, like, yeah, guess what? You should have held on to the ball, dude. We got it now. And then anywhere else out on the field, if that goes out of bounds, they still have the ball and they're spotting it at the spot that he fumbled the football. So I really struggled with that one. Where I really struggled on the thing was watching the replay, and I know it has to be conclusive, but I didn't think there was any way the ball went anywhere other than outside the pylon.
I agree with you.
That was the strange part to me. I know it has to be conclusive, but I thought they had the shot that was conclusive. Didn't you?
I did. I'm completely on your side there. Charles Davis, I appreciate you waking up early with us. We'll talk to you next week. Good luck with the Vikings and the Packers. Can't wait to watch it.
I appreciate it. Tell the kids hello, Clay. Talk to you later.
Well, will do. They'll be thrilled that you said hi to him. He's the voice of Madden. My boys are blown away. Go follow him on Twitter at CFD22.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Are the phones working? Do we know? Danny G, I believe we have an official phone guy now. Is that accurate?
We do. In Nashville, Tennessee now, we have a brand new phone screener. Welcome, Dub, to the show.
So, what's up, boys?
Oh, there he is. All right, so 877-996-6369. The phone lines are going to be open. Your opportunity to react to the weekend and now the full week of the NFL. 877-996-6369. A full-time phone screener now on the clock. All right, what do we got, Dub? Dub is on the clock now. He's putting together all of the calls. All right, Dub, who should we go to first? You're on the clock. You got to make plays here. Is it Victor in L.A.?
Victor in L.A. is up first.
All right, Victor in L.A. What's shaking, my man? All right, let's say this right now for a moment here. Let's pause for a minute. Dub is only in charge of making sure that the phone calls work flawlessly. Danny G and Jason Martin have complained so much about taking phone calls that I went to our bosses and I said, I want a full-time phone guy.
In your face, Clay Travis.
All this guy has to do is pick up the phone, answer it, and then make these guys actually go on air. All right? So Dub, all Dub has to do in the Nashville studio is pick up the phone, say, hi, what's your name, where are you calling from? And frankly, as we get more and more calls and this happens, just be like, hey, you suck, we're not going to put you on the air, right? Like at some point, he will then be able to have like the sword of justice and wipe out anybody that he thinks is bad, and we don't ever have to hear him on the show. Okay, so Dub is there. He has one responsibility. And Dub, what happened there?
To truth be told, last show I worked for didn't take one single phone call. I did not get too much preparation on how to work this here landline. It looks like it's from about 1992.
Now, look, there is no doubt that the Nashville studio, it looks like the studio that you saw in Lost. Like the main Nashville studio that exists for this show is like if the bunker, if you watched Lost, it's like 1974 in there. Like it is a disgrace. So you're telling me that you are in charge of fielding phone calls and you don't actually know how to put people on the air?
You know, it's a process. You know, I'm learning on the fly here. Like I said, not a whole lot of preparation was given to me on how to use these here phones.
All right, so you can answer the phone. You can talk to people and tell them that they are going to be on the radio, but you don't know how to actually put them on the radio.
Yes, that is true.
Sounds like vindication
this
to me.
This is such a solid start. This is such what I would expect for the phone screening position to end up happening. Is that we would what's the phrase here that I'm looking for? Like
production.
Chewing gum, like MacGyver. This show is held together by like chewing gum and like shoestrings.
What about our huge budget, though?
We are on 300 stations nationwide, and we have got like an antenna that MacGyver rigged that is held up by chewing gum and like a couple of different old British Knights sneaker. like Mike and Mike, they're out there spending like $40 million a year on their show. We don't know how to put people on. So, Dub, let's talk through the process now. Here we have people like the phone lines, I'm sure, just lighting up like a Christmas tree there. We don't know how to actually put the caller on. What is your process to figure out how to work the phones?
Well, right now we got three people on hold, lines 2, 3, 4. And, I'm going to push number 2. That would be Dan in Northridge.
All right, Dan, and this is our grand plan, is we're going to push the number 2 button here. Dan in Northridge, what's up? Is it Dan or Don? Because you're starting to panic a little bit. No. You wrote Don.
Oh, Don, excuse me.
Yeah. All right, we got names wrong, and Don in Northridge, are you there? All right.
Clay, your master plan of replacing me is going very well.
I don't even know what more I could do to make the show work. So we have a full-time call screener who can field the calls, but we can't actually hear them on the air.
Let me jump in here really quick. The VIP line is ringing, and I answered it. It's Brian in Atlanta on the
Outkick
VIP line.
All right, the VIP line is at least working. Yep. All right, Brian in Atlanta. What's up, Brian?
Hey, guys. Good morning. Clay, how did you put up with that guy yesterday on your new TV show to the left? I've watched that. You handled it very professionally. I would have probably cussed him out and lost my job day one. So
which guy? Was that Furman or was that Cousin Sal?
Not Cousin Sal. It was Furman. God, that guy is annoying as hell. You did better than all of them combined, but that guy is just, he was rolling his eyes every time anyone said anything. Just acting like a know-it-all, but your commentary was very good, but maybe that's how the acting should go on the show. I don't know how it's planned, but man, you handled
let's make
it very
sure
well.
Let's make sure we grab that audio because Furman's going to be on the show Thursday in hour 3. Todd Furman's a good buddy of mine, so we have known each other for like 5, 6, 8 years, whatever the heck it is. So he is very good at disrespecting everything that I say. And he'll be on the show, by the way, on Thursday in hour 3.
You heard Brian, screw that guy.
Yeah, well, I wasn't sure which guy he was going to say. My mom watched. She said I was the most handsome on the show, and she also said that I was the smartest. So, I mean, let's be honest. When your mom watches and says that you're the most handsome and you're the smartest, who else is more objective than a mom would be? I mean, that's honestly what I would say. And I got to say, I expected to get a lot more negative, because Twitter hates everything, right? Like, you see my mentions. Sometimes you get tagged in them. People say mean things to me all the time. And, you know, like, for, I think one reason that I have been successful is because it's almost impossible to offend me. I let everything just kind of go almost immediately. I'm like a defensive back, right? I might get burned on like five straight plays, but I expect on the sixth play that I'm going to be perfect. Like, I have the self-confidence of a cornerback in a football game, right? Doesn't matter what's happened before, I immediately forget everything. And so I think that helps me. A lot of people stew and they marinate in mean things that are said, but I got to say, I got almost no negativity associated with the show in a medium on social media where I think negativity oftentimes trumps positivity. Now, the flip side of that might be, it's possible no one was watching. It's possible, like, my mom and Brian down in Atlanta were like the only people who were actually, and you, Danny G, were like only people watching.
One thing I noticed was the lighting on you seemed a little off. The rest of the cast, they looked tan. You looked like a pale monster.
Well, first of all, I've actually got a good tan because I spent a lot of time at the beach this summer.
So it was definitely the lighting then.
I will say this. I have, like, in my house, I have got – it's a pretty impressive, like, mechanism they have set up to be able to allow me to do the show from my house. And when they flip on the switches for the lights, it is like a it's like a stadium – lights coming on. Like, if you're like, when I'm sitting in my chair and those lights come on, it's immediately blinding. I mean, it's like if you were trying to escape prison and they got like eight spotlights to shine on you at the same time, that's what it feels like. And so the lights are insanely bright in here.
It's like, and the Chicago Cubs' very first night game.
Yeah, back 8/8/88 at Wrigley Field. And I remember that because of the date. When they put these lights on, I mean, it's like a generator's flipping the switch and everything, by the way, boom, is going on. So do we still have Dub? Dub, we got it. So what is your plan now to figure out how to handle the phones?
During the break.
Because obviously pushing the button's not working.
Yeah, that's not working. That plan A is out the window. Plan
yes.
B, I'm going to go into the big room, the main studio, with all the newer equipment that's less than 20 years old and try and figure it out there.
All right, so I don't know if Jason Martin is awake, but one of our philosophies here to allow you to potentially get better at fielding the calls and be able to get them on the air is to have Danny G share Jason Martin's contact with you. And Jason Martin complained about fielding calls in that studio for 2 years, but I'm certain that he could tell you what you need to do to be able to field calls. Now, a better show, a more prepared show, would have potentially thought maybe the call screener, we should make sure that the call screener knows how to put the phones on the show. But of course, we have not done that. And honestly, the drama associated with our inability to actually get people on is what makes this show great, I think. And by great, I mean great in quotation marks. And I've got to tell you about, ZipRecruiter. And one of the things, like, maybe I need to fire Dub because he's already inability to get people on the air. But if I did, we would be able to go out and find the greatest possible candidates to be the best at fielding phone calls, because ZipRecruiter would find all of the best candidates and they would bring them to us.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.